Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Do you like your gravy thick and rich and loaded with creamy mushrooms? If no one was looking, would you chug the whole gravy boat?
Chug, 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 chug.
Stay tuned. Here comes Mr. Chug-a-Lug himself, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the program. I am sitting with Albin Sadar.
What?
Albin, yes. Huh. Not only are you here.
Yeah.
But you're there also.
I'm here and there.
No, you've written an article.
Everywhere.
I wanted to ask you about it.
Oh, yeah.
You've written an article at The American Thinker. It is called The Fundamental Unraveling of America. This is something you and I have talked about a lot. I'm glad you wrote about it in an article. But what's the gist?
Well, the whole gist is, you know, when Barack Obama came on the scene and he said it's going to be a fundamental transformation of America, people were like, oh, great. We're going to think. In a sense, they were thinking, oh, he's going to make America great again.
Think how. But I'm saying you picked up on this.
Yeah.
When Obama said that, it's an extraordinary thing, a fundamental transformation of America. You'd think what we should have said was, wait a minute, why would you want a fundamental transformation of America? How bad is America that you would say such a thing?
Well, I say in this article, because he's running for election to be a president of the country, it's almost like I want to marry this country. I have an example in this article, The Fundamental Unraveling of America, where it's like you marry somebody and say, I love you, I love you. You get married and say, okay, now, honey, I want you to be a different person. You know, I don't really love you per se, but I love what you can become, what I can mold you into. I want to change you foundationally. And when you change the foundation in this country, you're changing the Constitution. You're making it a different country. It might be in the same location, but it's a different building that you're putting up there, folks.
And he lay the groundwork for what is happening today.
That's right. And Hillary was supposed to follow him, but a wrecking ball named Donald J. Trump came in and boom. And then after those 4 years, they said, no, we gotta keep it going.
Actually, before you even get to that, we need to be clear. From day one of Trump's administration, we now know, right, that Hillary Clinton and others created this fiction, these lies of this Russian dossier and Russian collusion. And they did this to hamstring his presidency for 4 years.
Yeah.
And we've never seen anything like it. And now that we know what happened, I mean, we could see what was happening is going on, but a lot of people didn't believe it. They took it seriously, this Russian collusion, whatever. So you have the Mueller report. It goes on and on and on and on. They were at war with the American people's choice back then. Yes. So you have 8 years of Obama. Then you have Trump gets in and he and Hillary Clinton and others went to war with him during his administration.
Yes.
And then, of course, in 2020, stole the election. Folks, if you don't know, the election was stolen. I'm sorry to say it was.
Yeah,
and the facts are coming out every day.
It was obvious. And in my book, obvious, I spend the whole fourth part of the book, like 12 chapters, short chapters, four pages each, about the obvious factor of the election being stolen. So pick up obvious if you get a chance. But in this article, I also talk about the Jesse Smollett playbook. And in the Jesse Smollett playbook, and just in case you're not familiar, that means if you can't find a crime, you got to make one up. Right now today, even in the courthouse with Donald Trump and many courthouses, either in D.C. or New York, basically, Donald Trump is on trial for made up crimes because they couldn't find an actual crime.
But you know something, like if your heart doesn't break over this, folks, that this country, that we've come to this place, we have to fight to take our country back, to bring real justice so that when you go into a court of law, you don't say this is a game. You believe in the idea of justice, these noble ideas. And this is ultimately what happened in the presidency of Barack Obama, in the deep state attacking Donald Trump, and then during this nightmare of the last 4 years Under the so-called Biden administration.
Yeah, and my twin brother was recently in a cemetery, and he was looking. A lot of cemeteries have this rows and rows of white crosses of men and women, young men and women, who put their very lives on the line to die for this country so that they can prevent tyranny over across the seas. And now we have tyranny right here in this country. And you can imagine if those men and women were alive today to look at it and say, what, kindergarten kids getting sex books, guys transforming into men, into women, into, you know, wide open borders, letting people just pour across. And election day is now election season where we'll keep counting those ballots until we get the result we want. Do you think that's why people died, these young men and women?
Well, this is your point, I know, is that we owe those people everything that we need to get in the fight. They literally gave their lives so that we could have freedom, so that we could advocate for what's right and good and true. And if you're not advocating for those things, if you're not active, if you're not voting, it's a shameful thing.
Yeah.
But there are many, I keep saying this in my books, Letter to the American Church and the new book, is that there are many people think they have some religious exemption. And when you see injustice, I mean, and if anybody reads in your book, Obvious, the how the election was stolen, folks, you're going to be responsible. This is on the test.
Yeah.
The election actually was stolen. It's a nightmare that that could happen in America, but it happened. But what makes it even worse is how many people said, nah, there's no evidence. Shut up. Let's just accept it. And I think to myself, wow. How could you accept the theft of the voice of the American people? How can you accept that? People died so that we could have a free country, and we can't allow this to happen.
I know. And I, you know, there's still people out there thinking like, well, Trump is still on the scene. Once Trump's off the scene, whatever happens in 2024, we'll get him in 2028. And then in 2028, we'll get them in 2032.
Yeah.
We're not going to get them, folks. This is it. You got to put it all on the line.
Well, there are people who don't believe that. I was just talking to one of them this morning who was interviewing me about my new book, and he simply doesn't believe this is it. And that's the point, is like, one of us is right and one of us is wrong. And I wish I were wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I were wrong. But I don't believe that that's right. There's a kind of a cynicism where people kind of, again, it's the same thing happened in Germany. They were convinced in 1934, you know what?
Yeah.
Don't kill yourself. Just let
flash,
it go.
Flash in the pan.
Do church. Don't argue. And we'll – guess what, folks?
Yeah.
That's what led to the death camps.
And there, unfortunately, I have friends that say, look, I'm here to preach the gospel. That's what I do. And I'll tell you something. The far, far left, they want you to sit there and just preach the gospel. Preach your little gospel. That's okay. Don't interfere with what we're doing folks. That's what you have to understand. They're on top of this. And if you think they didn't steal the 2020 election, every single day they've been in office, they've done stuff that you say like, I can't believe they've done that. I can't believe they've done that. I can't believe they've done that. But I know that one thing they didn't do was steal the election so that they can do this.
Yeah.
Come on, folks. This is what fascists do. Okay.
I guess that's the point, is that we've been so spoiled in America. But this was the same in Germany. They had things pretty good, so they could not imagine the evilness of evil. They couldn't imagine. And so they didn't do anything. And by not doing anything, I mean, I actually talk about Martin Niemöller.
Yes.
I think I write about it in Religionless Christianity. There's a chapter where he was convinced that Hitler could be reasoned with.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes in, finally gets a meeting with Hitler, and Hitler, he sees the true face of Adolf Hitler. And Hitler basically says to him, you just worry about your sermons. I'll worry about
that's
the Third Reich.
That's
that's what you just said.
In other words,
you preach your useless
little
sermons
little gospel
because we're in charge of all of reality.
Yeah.
So you go into that building and do what you like, but we will determine the details of how the nation is governed. And this was where suddenly you have Martin Niemöller thinking, oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
That he wants to crush. He doesn't want the church to actually be the church. He wants the church to play church so he can be God and rule the nation.
He had this Luke 15:17 moment when he came to his senses.
Yeah.
That's when he came
that's
to
right.
When Paul fell off his horse, he came to his senses.
That's right.
And Jesus said, when he looked over all of Jerusalem, if you only knew where your salvation was coming from, when will you come to your senses? And that's what we're saying to Christians out there. When will you come to your senses?
Well, if you come to your senses, or to help you come to your senses, you might want to get a copy of Obvious by Albin Sadar.
Thank you.
And well, I mean, honestly,
and
you spell stuff, but you spell stuff out in that book.
Yes,
that it's
and
so bite sized. It's very simple, and it's
and
wonderful.
And there's jokes, and there's cartoons, and memes, and all. No, it's fun. They're short chapters.
It's
three
actually
or four
fun.
Pages. And Eric wrote the foreword.
And I wrote the foreword. And if people want to read your article, they can find it at American Thinker: The Fundamental Unraveling of America. We'll be right back.
For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of this show, which is why I am proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech, religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military, veterans, and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Metaxas, patriotmobile.com/Metaxas, or call 972-PATRIOT, 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation when you use the offer code Metaxas. Join me. Make the switch today. That's patriotmobile.com/Metaxas. Legacy Precious Metals has a revolutionary new online platform that allows you to invest in real gold and silver online. In a few easy steps, you can open an account online, select your metals of choice, and choose to have them stored in a vault or shipped to your door. You have access to a dashboard where you can track your portfolio growth in real time, anytime. You'll see transparent pricing on each coin and bar. This puts you in complete control of your money. The platform is free to sign up for. Visit legacypminvestments.com and open your account and see this new investing platform for yourself. Gold hedges against inflation and against a volatile stock market. A true diversified portfolio isn't just more stocks and bonds, but different asset classes. This new platform allows you to make investments in gold and silver, no matter how small or large, with a few clicks. Visit legacypminvestments.com to get started. You're going to love this free new tool they've added, legacypminvestments.com, legacypminvestments.com. Check it out.
We're experiencing instability at every level. Our government lacks leadership, and Bidenomics has been a disaster. The economy is in a fragile state. Inflation has been a consistent issue. High interest rates have put significant pressure on the real estate market. There have been major bank failures, and many analysts say a stock market correction is likely overdue. We have global conflicts in Europe and the Middle East that have the potential to spread, but gold has soared to record highs even amidst the tensions. There are so many reasons that Americans should consider investments in gold and silver, and Legacy Precious Metals is the gold standard. I love Legacy Precious Metals because of their zero-hassle, education-first approach. They can help you roll your traditional IRA into a gold IRA or ship metals directly to your house. Go to legacypminvestments.com to download their free gold investing guide. I've read it, and there's so much valuable information there. Friends, now is not the time to roll the dice with your hard-earned money. Find out about the growth potential that gold offers you. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today and tell them I sent you. Hey, folks, welcome back. I can't believe it, but I'm sitting here in the studio with Albin. Is it Sadar?
It's, yeah, Sadar like radar.
What kind of a name is that, Sadar?
It's a Slovenian, seriously.
Slovenian?
It's Slovenian.
I've got an even more important question.
Yeah.
What kind of a name is Albin?
It's also Slovenian. My mother's name was Albina, and of course, I have a twin brother named Anthony after my father, Albin after my mother. Albina, there you go. Thank you, folks.
Albin sounds like Alvin, but it's not.
Oh, I got that as a kid all the time.
Well, of course.
Hey, Alvin and the Chipmunks. I'm like, no, it's Albin. Nobody cares. Is your brother's name Theodore? No.
Well, anyway. Your name, we've settled it. It's Albin Sadar. So that was my question for you. But the reason
we
met here,
once, by the way.
I know. I feel like we've met. you wanted to ask me questions about my new book, Religionless Christianity.
Wow.
Or people have submitted questions, and you've been elected to read the questions to me.
I have, yes.
Okay,
I'm
nervous, but let's do it.
Well,
here we go.
You think you're nervous? This is a great book, by the way. Religionless Christianity: God's Answer to Evil. And there's another part of the front of the book that I think is absolutely spot on. It says, there is only one hope left to save America and the world: active, robust, and public faith in God. And I think most people out there that listen to this show and other shows like it will have to agree, because things have gotten so far off the rails that, you know, we're now in the ocean somewhere.
Well, but not everybody would agree, and that's why I wrote a letter to the American Church and why I wrote this book. I'm trying to make the biblical case so that people would consider it, because not every people are on this page. But anyway, so somebody who has submitted these questions you're going to ask
they're
me?
They're just from all over. So general questions, a lot of them come in like, you know, people ask the same questions over and over again. So I could say, like, Bob, Mary, Jane, and Bill, they all ask this question.
Okay.
In fact, let me start with the first question.
Okay.
And this is a general one to all authors, but what sparked you and your interest in writing this book?
I needed the bread, man. You know, the rent's due, and I had to come up with something.
It's all about this, money.
Yeah. Well, no, clearly, we hope that's not the case. We hope that I wrote it because God put it on my heart, which, you know what it is? Actually, Letter to the American Church, that book, I know God called me to write that in a way that I had never experienced anything before. Like, I knew I had to write that book. And the response to it has been so extraordinary, frankly, very surprising to me, that, you know, the publisher was saying, well, do you have more you want to say on this? And I thought, well, yes, actually quite a bit. And so the Letter to the American Church is my shortest book. This is almost as short. But there's some very important things in terms of, you know, when people say, okay, so I'm supposed to live out. I mean, if you agree with the premise of Letter to the American Church, I'm supposed to live out my faith. I'm not supposed to be merely religious as a Christian. What does that look like? Well, religionless Christianity means to be the answer to that question. What does it look like to actually live out your faith in a way that's not merely religious in the negative sense of religion? And I don't know, should I answer the question about the title now, or is that one of the questions?
Well, that's the next question from Mary, Bob, Jill, and Peter. Can you define religiousless Christianity? Why is it God's answer to evil?
Well, obviously, I'm happy to say that I do write about all of this in the book, about the title, the meaning of the phrase. Religionless Christianity is a Bonhoeffer phrase. Bonhoeffer was writing to his best friend, Eberhard Bethge. I met Eberhard Bethge's widow in Germany in 2008. Eberhard Bethge was Bonhoeffer's closest friend, and he was intellectually brilliant, as Bonhoeffer was brilliant. And in a letter right at the end of his life, Bonhoeffer's in prison. I believe he's in the Gestapo prison, which was a dark place, figuratively and literally. And he wrote a letter to his best friend in which he was asking, now in 1944, how did we get where we are, that we've sort of lost the battle? The church did not live out its faith. And he says, if only we had had a religionless Christianity. And he's using religion in the pejorative term that Karl Barth would have used it, that religion as just dead religiosity, just playing church. And Bonhoeffer says what we ought to have had was a religionless Christianity. In other words, instead of going through the motions, you know, the Pharisees went through the motions in the temple. A lot of Christians go through the motions on Sunday morning. He was saying, instead of just doing that, what if we had actually lived out our faith in a heroic way, as though we actually believed it? We would have stood against the evil, but the German church didn't do that. And I thought, I need to explain, what is religion apart from real faith? What does that look like? What are some religious idols that Christians worship, thinking that they are being Christians, but actually these are just religious idols? And in the book, I lay out some of these religious idols where they're really substitutes for actually worshiping Jesus with our whole being. And so I kind of lay that out. And because it's an example of how Christians have been fooled in the past, and the story of Bonhoeffer, it's the classic case of, he was trying to wake up Christians to stop being merely religious and to be actually faithful in every sphere, willing to stand bravely against the Nazis. And they were thinking, no, we just want to do church. We just want to have our little religious services. We don't believe it's our job to get into that. So in the book, I try to unpack what these religious idols are and how we might be guilty of worshiping them rather than worshiping Jesus.
Yeah, because it seems like a lot of churches now have leaned toward becoming more like social clubs. Come on in. We're going to celebrate this activity and that activity, and we're going to have a bake sale, and we're going to, you know, and then they have their flags out there that don't say, you know, we believe in Jesus. It's like we believe in what the culture's doing. We're going to follow that. And so where did the religion go?
Well, there's a lot of that. I mean, that's really the darkest side. But to me, it's even churches that wouldn't go there, but neither are they being heroic in the battle for God's purposes.
You know, that leads me back to one of the most dramatic examples you put in Letter to the American Church about that. What was it, 18,000 churches? Yes. That. Could you explain that again? Because that is really powerful. I don't know if you redo it here in this
book. No, I don't. But it's in the Letter to the American Church. And in a sense, Letter to the American Church, you need to read that first, I would say, because it kind of tees up what I say in this book. But the bottom line was that in Germany, in the early 30s, there were about 18,000 Lutheran pastors in Germany. By 1935, 2 years into the Hitler regime, only 3,000 of the 18,000 were standing heroically, willing to go to concentration camps, really living out their faith. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got about 3,000 that are 100% in for Hitler. Mm. But the key is in the middle, you got 12,000 basically saying, you know what? We don't need to choose. We're going to stay right here in the safe religious middle. Except the safe religious middle, that sitting on the fence thinking you're being neutral, I always say over and over, the devil owns the fence. They believed that they had this kind of religious carve out, that we could do nothing, that we could be neutral. We're not going to stand heroically against the Nazis the way Bonhoeffer and others do. We're just going to stay here. You know, it's kind of like somebody saying, I'm not going to vote. Well, you're helping evil to win. And I try to make the case in Letter to the American Church that if you think you can avoid making a choice, you have made a choice. You have chosen to allow evil to have its way, but you're pretending you've got this religious objection and you can just be somehow neutral. And that, to me, is where many in the American church are today. And I'll say it is where there are many people who go to churches like that, where you're just effectively playing church on Sunday morning rather than saying, this is not the church. We are the church, and we meet on Sunday morning, but then we go out. Yes. The church goes out of the building and affects the culture and fights for God's purposes in every sphere, including politically, just as we did when we fought the slave trade, just as we did when we fought for the abolition of slavery in this country, just as when we fought politically to end Roe v. Wade. That's part of the church's calling. And so in both books, I try to make that clear.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Let's go on to what does it mean to, and I think you covered a lot of this, but what does it mean to live out your faith actively?
Yeah. Well, again, this gets to the core of what I'm calling sort of the American heresy, is this idea that we don't need to live our faith out in all spheres. We can talk about it, but the reality is it's like a hobby. It's something I do in the basement. It has no bearing on what I do when I leave the basement. That's the opposite of what our faith is supposed to be. Our faith is supposed to be lived out in every single sphere. And I think that we kind of make faith, as I say, it's like this part-time thing, but it's supposed to inform everything that we do. My faith is supposed to inform my relationships. It's supposed to inform what I would do with my life professionally. Everything is supposed to be informed by my faith. And I think that in America, we've been so blessed that we've gotten spoiled and complacent, and we kind of act like, well, it's this private thing. And we're supposed to bring God's view of things, the biblical view of things, into every single sphere. And a big part of the way we can do that is politics. We have the gift of self-government, where we can advocate for the right kind of for people who are advocating God's policies, or we can ourselves run for office. So there are many things. We'll continue that. I know we're going to a break. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Hey, this is Eric Metaxas. For years, I've told you about Nutramedics, a professional supplement brand trusted by doctors since 1993. Nutramedics offers a variety of health bundles, whether you want to support your immune system, improve your sleep, promote joint comfort, or detoxification support, Nutramedics has a health bundle right for you. The best part about Nutramedics, every year they donate a minimum of 50% of their profits to Christian charities and missions. That's right, 50% of their profits. Nutramedics has a goal of surpassing $100 million in giving by 2030. Many of you take supplements already. Switch to Nutramedics. It's the highest quality, and they donate 50% of their profits. Get 15% off by using the code ERIC during checkout. Go to Nutramedics.com and search health bundles. Support your health while helping others in need. Go to Nutramedics. That's NutraMedix.com. Nutramedics.com. Use the code ERIC for 15% off. Again, Nutramedics, NutraMedix.com. Nutramedics.com. Use the code ERIC for 15% off.
You might have heard Mike Lindell and MyPillow no longer have the support of their box stores or shopping channels the way they used to. Yes, it's because of cancel culture, but as a result, they get to pass the savings on to you directly by having a $25 extravaganza. When Mike started MyPillow, it was just a one-product company. With the help of his dedicated employees, they now have hundreds of products, some you may not even know about. To get the word out, I want to invite my listeners to check out their $25 extravaganza. Two-pack multi-use MyPillows, just $25. MyPillow sand $25. There's six-pack towels, just $25. Brand new four-pack dish towels, you guessed it, just $25. For the first time ever, the premium MyPillows with all new Giza fabric, just $25. Orders over $75 will receive free shipping too. The amazing offer will not last long. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code ERIC, or call 800-978-3057. That's promo code ERIC, 800-978-3057, promo code ERIC, or go to MyPillow.com and use promo code ERIC.
Hey folks, welcome back. We're talking about my brand new book, Religionless Christianity. That's a Bonhoeffer phrase, which I hope I explained sufficiently a few minutes ago. So, Albin, you're asking questions that the people who follow this program on YouTube they have submitted. So there's a couple more questions I think we have.
Oh, yeah. We've got a couple more. And speaking of Bonhoeffer, this next one kind of, I think a lot of people were thinking about this one. If Dietrich Bonhoeffer were alive today in 2024, what do you think he would say about the state of America?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's fair to say that, well, I say this, I think literally in the first page of this new book, that we're in a spiritual war. And that we are in the third existential crisis of our history. The first was the revolution. The second was the Civil War. And the third is where we are now. And what we're fighting now is the forces of real wickedness. In other words, the forces that are deeply hostile to Christian faith. In other words, it's not like in the old days where, you know, Tip O'Neill is the face of the Democrats, and we've got some differences on taxes and this and that. No, 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 no. We are now dealing with evil. I mean, we had the president of the United States, who is dramatically pro-abortion, who is dramatically pro-transgender. I mean, really sick stuff. He declared Resurrection Sunday, Easter Sunday, as some trans day of visibility. I thought to myself, I've never in my life seen such an open hostility to Christians. I've never seen it before. And I think if you're a Christian, you need to understand that's what's happening right now. And you need to be awake to it. And yeah. Bonhoeffer was awake to it in Germany. He said that what's happening now in Germany, we need to fight. And many, many, many Christians said, no, we think you're just being a hothead and take it easy. And, you know, Hitler, he'll be around, but he'll leave and we'll move on. And no. Bonhoeffer could see that the Nazis were playing for keeps. They wanted to fundamentally transform Germany.
Yeah.
Just as the atheist, Marxist, globalist forces in the world and inside America. Now, they want to fundamentally transform America, and they're doing it to make us no longer the nation that our founders brought into being with the Lord's help, to put it mildly. The Lord brought it into being. And it was once meant to be a city, a shining city on a hill, in the words of John Winthrop, and that it was supposed to be a beacon of liberty and a beacon, frankly, of Christian faith, so that people would look at this country and go, what do they have that we don't have? What are they doing that makes them flourish? Why is God blessing them? How come they can govern themselves? That's so beautiful. What is going on over there? I mean, Tocqueville came over here in the 1820s to investigate, because this didn't go that way in France. The French Revolution was a bloody, atheistic, to some extent demonic revolution. It did not go well. It was a bloodbath. So Tocqueville comes over here to say, what do they have? What is his conclusion? The churches, vibrant Christian faith. It was at the very heart of America.
Yeah.
Now, we weren't officially Christian, because why would we need to be officially Christian? We would just need to be actually Christian. We don't need to be officially Christian. But it was kind of assumed by all the founders that we're going to be essentially Christian. And we have drifted so far away from that. And we are now being attacked by people that are not just on board, but they are openly hostile to God's values, to God's principles, to biblical values, and to Christians. And so you have things that we never dreamt of in our lifetime, the FBI being weaponized against pro-life people. You have children being taken away from their mother and father because the mother and father have a biblical view of sexuality, of the human person, and they don't want to use their kids' quote-unquote pronouns. And in Indiana and other places, the kids are being taken away by the state. This is a level of wickedness, a level of evil we've never seen. And if the church doesn't recognize and say, it is our job, God has called us to stand against this, God has called us to get in the fight, then it's over. And so I'm afraid that that's where we are in America.
I see a simple example of that is this, guy wearing a dress and he's got a beard and he says, my name's Michelle and I want you to call me Michelle. And if you call him Michelle and treat him as a woman, not only does he have a problem, you have a problem.
Right.
And then, of course, the nation has a problem.
You've been forced to lie.
Exactly. Yeah. We are self-censoring. We're afraid. You know, I think if somebody said that to me and I went like this, it would go to the Supreme Court. You're not allowed to do that because that's hate speech. Yeah. That's a hate smirk.
But I mean, honestly, that's where we are.
Yeah.
And but the thing is, and again, the reason I wrote this, both of these books, but specifically this Religionless Christianity, is because there are many Christians who feel like they can opt out, they can avoid this, like it's not going to come for them. One of the chapters of the book, I talk about the spirit of cancel culture.
Yeah,
it is a wicked Marxist spirit, and it's coming for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to stand against it when it comes for anybody, not just when it comes for you. We'll talk about that later. But in the book, I talk about Bonhoeffer. I talk about Martin Niemöller.
Yes.
There's a lot of Bonhoeffer in this book.
Yeah, well, he's, of course, all through it because he gave you the title. He was like, oh, what title can I give Eric?
Yeah.
60, 70 years from
exactly,
now.
Exactly.
But when we come back, a very powerful question about, are you optimistic about the future of America and the world?
I can answer that question. It's funny because I say that we're in the third existential crisis of our history. We have survived the last two, but it's a war. You have to fight in a war. And I don't mean just fight with rifles or what. I mean, you have to understand what is at stake. And if you don't fight through prayer, through action, you definitely lose. And so when we come back, I'll answer that. And other questions, the new book is Religionless Christianity. You can get copies at ericmetaxas.com. I hope you will get a copy there. We'll be right back.
And this world won't forget about you.
I like knowing exactly where my meat comes from. And with Moink, that place is from small family farms all across the country. And you can help save the family farm and get access to the highest quality meat when you join the Moink movement today. Moink farmers farm like our grandparents did, and that means meat tastes like it should. Moink delivers grass-fed beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, a sustainable wild-caught Alaskan salmon delivered straight to your door. The Moink difference is one you can taste, and you can feel good knowing you're helping family farms stay financially independent too. Keep American farming going by signing up at moinkbox.com/Eric right now, and listeners of this show get free bacon for a year. You choose the meat delivered in every box, like ribeyes, chicken breasts, pork chops, or salmon fillets, and so much more, plus a free year of bacon, and you can cancel at any time. That's one whole year of the best bacon you'll ever taste, but only for a limited time. Spelled M-O-I-N-K, box.com/Eric. That's moinkbox.com/Eric. Moinkbox.com/Eric.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Eric Metaxas Show, and I'm being interviewed. It's kind of weird, Albert.
Yeah. By the way,
you turned the tables on me.
Your Spanish is excellent today.
Would you call it bastante bien?
Oh, there you go.
Let me just say that you're interviewing me.
Yes, I am.
On my new book, Religionless Christianity. Thank you for doing that. And
yeah.
These questions have been submitted to our YouTube page, TBN.
Yes.
And this program has a YouTube page. So what was the question?
Oh, yeah. This was a big one. We ran out of time in the last segment, but here it is. Are you optimistic about the future of America? And there's a part two, what should the church be doing right now? But
yeah.
Let's go with part one.
Yeah,
are
the
you
church
optimistic?
Should stop playing church and get in the game.
Stop being religionless.
Stop being religious.
And be
stop being merely religious. Okay, well, am I optimistic about America? It's hard to call it optimism. I am hopeful.
Mm.
I am at the end of the book, I say that, at the beginning of the book, I say we're in a third existential crisis. So I think of George Washington. I think of Lincoln. Mm. If you had gone to Washington or to Lincoln in the depths of the Civil War and the Revolutionary War and said, how you doing?
Yeah.
They would have said, we are doing very, very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
This is a horrible, horrible war we are in, and it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
If you had asked George Washington in 1776, how's it going? He would have said it's going very, very poorly. It was going very poorly. They were in a war. But he also would have said, I think, we're in a war and it's going poorly. But if God be with us in this cause of liberty, we can prevail. Our job is to lean on the Lord as we fight on. We don't stop fighting until the Lord says it's over.
Yeah.
And there are many people who would have said, it's looking pretty bad, George. Why don't you just throw in the towel? And he thought, I can't do that. I need to fight on. I've been called to bring a nation into being that where we will govern ourselves. It's an extraordinary concept. It's a beautiful concept. It's God's concept. And if the Lord wants to give us the victory, he can give us the victory and pull us out of this difficult spot. So if you said to him, how you doing in 1776, he would have said badly, but we fight on and we fight on and we pray on and we pray on. If you don't fight, because things look bad, you're guaranteed to lose, guaranteed. And that's exactly where I think we are today. Yeah. We're in a battle. It looks bad. But if the Lord be with us, then we can win. And who people who say no, that's the voice of the devil telling you to just give throw in the towel. Yeah. Don't fight.
I like the joke about the guy goes to the doctor. The doctor says, you're in really bad shape. You got to take these pills. And he says, doctor, I'm a Christian. I believe that God is in charge and predestination and all that. So don't worry about me. I'm not taking any pills. And the doctor says, I'm also a Christian. And I believe that God's in charge. And here's the predestination part. If you take the pills, you're predestined to live. If you don't take the pills, you're predestined to die. Well, listen, folks, if you don't fight at all, you're going to die. We're going to die. Which side do you want to be on at the end? Do you want to be on the side like the guys in the Alamo, you know, that fought on and fought on, but the victory was ultimately theirs because at some point, you know, God comes in and says, this is what's going to happen.
You know what? That's exactly right. Would you rather be Bonhoeffer or would you be rather one of those people who, through fear or some misunderstanding of the scripture, sat and did nothing and really brought about the death of Bonhoeffer?
Yeah.
That's what happens, right? If you don't fight with him, you're responsible for enabling his enemies to kill him, and you're responsible for the enemies of Germany to destroy Germany, which they did.
And I'll tell you, one of the most beautiful scenes in your book, Bonhoeffer, is when he is going to his death. I had tears in my eyes, and he was boldly going to his death because he knew he was going to a better life. He knew he stood against the evil of his day. And yeah, he would have, oh my goodness, he would have loved to have lived. He would have loved to have gotten married. He would have loved to have a family and been a grandfather and a great-grandfather. But he took a stand for future generations and for the generations in Germany that would hang their head in shame because they did not take a stand.
See, that's it right there. Do you want to be like Bonhoeffer? Then you fight for what is right and true, and you allow the Lord to be the one who determines the outcome. But your job is to fight. Your job is to stand for truth, to speak against evil, not to be silent in the face of evil. That's ultimately what I hope to deal with in this book.
Yeah, and here's a great chapter in this book I want to get to and get your thoughts on this because, you know, we started out with politically correct and it was kind of like funny. Ah, you're not politically correct. Ah. And then it became woke and then it becomes cancel culture where now it has a serious, serious charge to it. So what are your further thoughts? And it's from the book.
Yeah, I do. There are two chapters in the book on cancel culture. And this is another one of the reasons I hope people will read the book Religionless Christianity because you need to understand what is happening? What is cancel culture? It's not just something. What is it? There's a spirit behind it. It's the same spirit, which is evil, that was happening during the French Revolution. It happened during the Bolshevik Revolution. It happened in the Nazi takeover of Germany. It happened in Mao's Cultural Revolution in China in the 60s. It is demonic. And it wants power, and it is bloodthirsty, and it's willing to pick off people. That's part of it, right? It has no actual standards. What it does, it pretends to care about the poor, pretends to care about racial equality, it doesn't care about any of these things. All it's doing is using these things as a way to pick people off. And in the book, I talk about my friend Kirk Cameron. He was on Piers Morgan. I tell the whole story in the book. And he was asked by Piers Morgan, you know, if he was in favor of same-sex marriage. And he said in the most kind way possible that he had a biblical view of marriage. He was attacked like he was the devil. And I thought, where were all the leading Christian voices to stand with him to fight back against these evil forces that had come? They wanted, you know, Kirk Cameron's head on a platter. It was not about Kirk Cameron. It's about when you put up a biblical standard, people are going to come after you. Yeah. They did not stand with him. Yeah. And the spirit of cancel culture wants to pick people off one at a time. I know we're going to a break here, but I just want to say that is where it starts. So whenever somebody comes after anybody, you don't need to agree with the person on everything. It's the principle. You need to stand against the spirit of cancel culture, which is demonic. You can call it what you want. We're going to a break. Okay, so the book is Religionless Christianity. Folks, you can get it at ericmetaxas.com. We'll be right back. there, folks. Welcome back. I have a new book out, and Albin has asked to interview me on it. So we have just one segment left today, but
we'll make it quick, but we'll do more later. I want to ask you about Chapter 9, but before we get there, you were talking about Kirk Cameron and speaking the truth in love. In Ephesians, that's where you're going to find that phrase, speak the truth in love. But the verse right before it says something about there will be a day when there's all kind of deceptive truth out there, and you've got to be smart and you've got to be wise about confronting it. So it's so funny. It sounds like it was written about today. A lot of deceptive truth, but you have to confront it and speak the truth in love. Now, getting back to this, Chapter 9 in your book, this is very mysterious, this title, Bonhoeffer Burns His Boats, BBB.
That's a principle. It happened in Alexander the Great when he was attacking Persia, the empire. He did this radical thing. Cortez also did this in the early 16th century, where you say, we're going to cut off our own escape route because we are going to fight to the death. In other words, we're not going to allow ourselves a way out. If we're going to force ourselves to fight with everything we have. And I think a lot of times that's what the church doesn't do. Like we fight a little bit, but then it gets hot and we go, we'll back off. You have to have the discernment to say, no, I'm going to go all in and I'm going to lean on God. Without God, I lose. I need to lean on the Lord. I'm going to burn my boats so that I don't have an escape route. And Bonhoeffer does that a couple of times, but he does that most specifically in 1939 when he comes back to Germany. He was in America.
Yeah.
And he says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back and I'm just going to be there for God's purposes. I have an escape route. I'm in America, but I'm not going to take it. I'm going to go there and I'm going to lean on God. And it's an amazing thing, but it's a principle.
Yeah.
And so I write about it in the book that we need to understand what it means when God wants us all in.
Yeah.
Not just a little bit, but like this is, it's kind of like saying like, okay, folks, this is it. There's no tomorrow. Yeah. This is it. We have to fight with everything we have now. I think we're at that point in America now. That's why I say it's an existential crisis. If we don't use everything we have now, we're guaranteed to lose. Mm-hmm. We need to use everything we have, and we need every Christian. And I say this, you know, if the church is those of us who call on the name of Jesus, it's not the building that I go to. It's not the denomination. It's those of us who say we're Christians. We're the church. Well, you, Mr. or Mrs. Christian, you might be the tipping point. In other words, you might be the one. If you go all in, that might be the tipping point into we will save the nation for God's purposes as a platform for the faith in the world, as a platform for freedom. It might be literally up to you. And when we say, what is the church? You're the church.
Yeah. And the truth is, we were all born for such a time as this. So you got to step up, folks. You're either going to sit on the couch. I was watching a Yankee game the other day. I only watched a couple innings. And I said, I can't believe this. This is the way America used to be. You used to watch a baseball game, sit back, relax, enjoy yourself, and say, all is right with the world. And I thought to myself, but things are not all
right
with the world. It's okay. Yeah, you need some refreshment, but you got to get back into the fight. And by the way, if Sam Houston had come to the Alamo with reinforcements that they were hoping for, that would have been a different battle. And so we who are in the Alamo now are looking for reinforcements so we can...
That's a beautiful way of putting it. I don't say it in the book. Now I wish I had. That's beautiful. We need to fight on and fight on. And I explain it in the books, Letter to the American Church, Religionless Christianity. I recommend you get them at ericmetaxas.com. Albin, I know we want to continue this conversation. We'll do it another time. But in the meantime, thank you so much for being willing to do this.
Thank you, Eric.